Kelman on CliffCentral.com.
All right, live from California, let's see what's happening to Nathan Slavik, who made an interesting observation around Beyonce's Lemonade album and who was involved. Nathan, how's it going?
Great, how you doing?
Very, very good, sir. I would imagine walking into this that you are a massive music fan. I know that you're a writer, an editor, and a media personality in your own right, and you've been featured by the likes of MTV and Fader, but you love music, right? You must do to be taking a look at the credits so seriously.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, music's my life. I'm blessed enough to have made it my career. And I think beyond just, you know, the fan experience of loving music, I've really sat down to learn the business of music. And as soon as you learn the business of music, you kind of discover all these little open doors. And this Soulja Boy Beyonce one is a great example of that, I think.
Let's zoom in on this open door. How does Soulja Boy and Beyonce come together in the story on Medium.com that you published?
Sure. Well, what's interesting, what I don't think a lot of people maybe realize about how songwriting and song creation work is people don't even have to be in the studio. Someone doesn't even have to physically write. If you're an artist and you quote someone, they get songwriting credit.
Huh.
So in this case, Beyonce says, hopped up out of bed, turned my swag on. That is quite clearly the work of only one man in this world, Mr. Soulja Boy. And so he gets a songwriting credit. It's an interesting gray area. You can kind of use a couple words, maybe a little phrase, and not credit someone. But if you say something in a song that's clearly quoted from someone else, maybe it's a movie, maybe it's another artist, that person gets songwriting credit. And if they get songwriting credit, that means they get publishing. And if they get publishing, that means they get paid for it. And they're included in all sorts of things, like a Grammy. So we could very well see Soulja Boy winning a Grammy for Beyonce's Lemonade album. He'd be included in that as a songwriter. He'd have the award sitting on his shelf.
What kind of discussions do you think go on, you know, in putting an album like that together, and when everybody sits around a table and starts to look at the lyrics and then realize they may have to give Soulja Boy a cut of it? I mean, that must be a serious conversation at a record label, especially when it's a Beyonce album, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Beyonce is probably in the rarefied air of not caring a whole lot. She just has so much money. There's so much money behind this album. You know, writing a check to Soulja Boy is probably not that big of a deal. But for a lot of other artists, it can be a really big deal. They might have to cut parts of a song. I know a good example is, people might remember, it might not, but Ariana Grande had a big song with Mac Miller, called The Way.
Yeah.
In which he quoted Big Pun. He said, "I'm not a player, I just crush a lot." And they, which is clearly, obviously, it can only be a Big Pun reference, but they didn't want to pay the publishing. They didn't want to pay Big Pun. They thought his estate was asking too much. So if you listen close to the song, he says, "I'm not a player, I just," and then cuts the line off there, so that they could claim that it wasn't an actual quote. So, yeah, it's kind of interesting. The art gets changed by the business. They're making these kind of decisions all the time. Oh, you got to take that line out. We can't pay for it. Sorry.
Yeah.
That type of stuff's happening all the time.
There's quite an interesting irony, though, in, you know, people arguing over lines and rights and that kind of thing, especially against the context of music piracy and the fact that someone's going to take that song and download it for free illegally anyway. I mean, that's a bit of an interesting juxtaposition, right?
That's true. Yeah, it gets to how are people making money anymore.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's quite serious that Soulja Boy might make more out of from this Beyonce quote than he has selling his own music in years. That's easily conceivable. But I think for other songwriters and publishers, it becomes a big thing as well. I mean, it can even be legal. When you're listening to something on Spotify, we talk all the time about artists, how much are artists getting paid for a Spotify stream. There's a million streams of a song, this artist made 25 cents.
Yeah.
Well, that's what the artist made. So imagine what a songwriter who's getting a fraction of that money is making. And when you're downloading an album, you know, a quote-unquote pirate who might illegally download an album, they're not, say, taking money away from just that main artist or that record label, but every producer, songwriter on there is also losing out. So the economics of that has some kind of wide-reaching implications.
certainly wide-reaching implications. It's also an applicable term to the fact that Soulja Boy, when he wrote that song, never would have imagined it would have landed up in a Beyoncé album. And you allude to that in the article, this idea of how, you know, amazing it is that in that space and time and what Beyoncé was trying to communicate, she felt that Soulja Boy's line was the best way to do so. I mean, it really is luck of the draw, really.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so interesting to think that someone can just change your fate like that, right?
Yeah.
They just make a decision. I think I'm going to hop about a bed, turn my swag on. That'd be funny to say. People get it's a Soulja Boy reference. That'd add a little flavor to the song right now. I'm just going to say it. And that could almost change someone's life. You hear that all the time. A huge artist decides to say something, and out of the blue, someone, particularly maybe an older artist, you know, we talk about more recent examples, but there are soul R&B artists from the 60s and 70s who, you know, frankly, maybe in relatively dire straits in their old age, and not having, like, kind of having bad deals early on in their career. And one call from Beyonce, one call from Usher, Drake deciding to sample a song or quote a song, that could change their lives. There's their retirement account right there out of nowhere.
For you, you know, moving into the future, the bulk of the money in the music industry, who do you think it sits with, or who does it lie with?
Well, I mean, the record labels are still making all the money. They kind of try to cry foul a lot of the time, cry poverty. But make no mistake, I mean, Universal Music Group, for example, it's a billion-dollar business. So there's still a lot of money in music, and it's still concentrated at the top. Surprise, surprise. But I think, you know, we're seeing more and more that as much as the internet has taken away, it's also added all these extra levels and opportunities for people to make money, significant money, independently. You know, you've got someone like Chance the Rapper, who's got a huge career, lucrative career without a major label. If I'm not mistaken, I think you were just playing a Macklemore song. That's someone who's independent.
Yeah.
Has managed to have a massive career without signing to a record label. So, you know, I think the money is still in the hands of the same power that's always been, but we're seeing more and more cracks in that structure. There's more opportunities for artists than ever to make money. You know, and if Beyonce quotes you, all the better. That'll help just a little bit.
A lot of people are linking the word music and lifestyle in, you know, every facet that they possibly can in a pop culture context. Music and lifestyle, do you feel like they are more together now than they've ever been before?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it ties into what we've been talking about. So with now that you're not going to make any money selling an album, really, right? Even a hugely popular album might get streamed on Spotify versus purchased in a store. So what are you going to sell? If you can't sell the music, you have to sell the lifestyle. And the lifestyle is merchandise. That's not just, you know, normal t-shirts, but now artists are coming out with all sorts of merchandise, hoodies and hats and
emojis,
posters and emoji. That's an amazing example, right? Kim Kardashian made more money off that emoji most people make off their albums. That's a lifestyle product. So artists are in a similar way. The music drives the lifestyle. The music isn't the thing you make money from anymore. It's the thing that gets you attention so you can sell someone. It's a commercial in some ways, if you want to look at it like that. So I think you're absolutely right. Lifestyles become the business, and the two have merged in a way that, you know, the Beatles weren't selling lifestyle products, right? Rolling Stones were selling lifestyle products. The music was still the driving force there, and that's changed a lot. You're absolutely right.
So if for a musician, you know, lifestyle is a big push and a big focus, do you think that it kind of hinders the art in any way, or are we still being very true about the art of making great music?
I think like everything, it's kind of a blessing and a curse. You know, now that artists might feel like they have more freedom, now that they're not necessarily so tied to having to sell the music itself. But on the flip side, I think you're absolutely right as well. We're seeing more corporate sponsors coming into music, and that can lead to self-censorship in a very real way. You know, if one of them can focus on Beyonce, she did Formation. All these songs have a real political impact as well. But she's also got a massive contract with Pepsi. So how Pepsi is going to receive all that is something she has to factor in a way that she wouldn't have had to, you know, years ago when that wasn't happening as much. So I think you're absolutely right. At the very least, it makes being an artist a lot harder. You can't just go in your garage and record a demo anymore. you've got to launch yourself as a brand, as a lifestyle, not just kind of focus solely on the music. Or I should say, you can focus solely on the music, but it's going to be hard to have a lucrative career. There's absolutely nothing wrong with just making incredible art. But if you want to do that as your full-time profession, you're going to have to do more than just make music. That's just the stone cold reality of where the business is in 2016.
Yeah, it's almost odd to start thinking of a musician like one would a brand. You know, like you would think of Coca-Cola, and to think of Beyonce in the same context or in the same sort of framework is very difficult. To think of this person as a moving, operating, marketing machine. For you, what's the most interesting thing about the state of music in 2016?
That's a great question. I think as we started this conversation off by saying, I'm someone who both loves just the music itself, and I also am particularly fascinated by where the business is headed, where the culture is headed. So I think, you know, someone like Chance the Rapper is really opening up a lot of lanes and avenues for people to reinvent this music industry as it's been for decades now. Change how people can become massive stars and the kind of music that they can make. You know, the internet's killed a lot of the music industry. It's saturated. It's oversaturated, right? The problem used to be, I used to get CDs in the mail. I've been doing this for so long that record labels just send me CDs begging for me to listen. Now they just assume that you're going to download it like everyone else.
Yeah.
And so there's so much music out there. The problem now is filtering it, figuring out how to not to get drowned in it. But that's also opened up a lot of avenues for people. There are artists and musicians having their music discovered and heard by people across the globe who wouldn't have been able to otherwise. In the 80s, if you were a South African musician, there was essentially no way someone in the U.S. was going to hear your music. It would have been extremely difficult. Not impossible, but extremely difficult. Now, throw a video up on YouTube, there's no reason you can't have 10 million, 100 million people hear your music and have it go viral. That can happen. I think that's actually pretty exciting.
I would imagine for you in your context as this writer, you know, an editor and contributing to all these different platforms that you do, for you it's about curating the best of the best, right? And taking all that stuff that lives online and finding the good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I think pointing out the best of the best, and I think helping people understand and make sense of what's going on. We're getting so much what. I think there's a real high value on why. Yeah. Sounds like, you know, that's what you do as well, right? That you're helping people understand what's happening in the culture, understand the music. I might not personally love something, but if it's interesting, if I think it says something about where music's at and where the culture is headed, then, you know, you write about it. I think there's a real space for people to be able to come in and explain why things are happening. The Soulja Boy thing is a great example.
Mm.
As many people love Soulja Boy, I don't think many people realize what this means. Some people might go, oh, huh, that's funny. I get that. That was a Soulja Boy reference. But I don't think they understand, not very many people understand what the impact of that really is. And so that's a good example of kind of trying to find those stories you can explain to people. Hey, here's what's happening behind the scenes. Here's what this really means.
Yeah, it's the business of the music industry, and it's certainly one that you can only really learn, I guess, when you're fully immersed in it, and you kind of got to pick it up as you go, because there's no handbook, to my knowledge, that would let you know that, you know, you may be Soulja Boy one day, write a song, and then before you know it, a line of it is in a Beyonce album, and you've made more money than you have in your entire career thus far. I mean, that doesn't exist in any book anywhere.
Absolutely. And you know, if there was a book, there are books, but it's changing so much.
Yeah.
It changes every day. The rules get broken and reinvented every day. So it's hard to know, you know, what you would even tell someone.
My final question for you, Nathan, just as we wrap up in the last minute here, is what do you want out of music fans? What can music fans be doing more in 2016 that we're not doing right now?
It sounds simple, but support the artists that you really love, because you could make the difference in this point between someone being able to make more of that music and not. A lot of those walls, like we've been saying, have broken down. You know, I think when you've got a hugely famous artist who signed to a huge record label, you know, you might buy their albums, but they feel so distant. that's really stopped now. Like we're saying, you can identify a small artist, maybe an independent artist, you think is just making incredible music that really touches you. Mm-hmm. And by buying their album, buying their merch, even just reaching out to them and following them on Facebook, whatever the case is, you can enable that person to quit that terrible day job they have and just focus on making more of the music you love. So I think you know, fans have more direct power than ever.
It's a very cool message. Thank you so much for the piece on Medium.com. It's called Soldier Boy Could Win a Grammy for Beyonce's Lemonade album. I'm glad you studied those credits. Nathan Slavik is a writer, editor, and media personality. He's at Refined Hype on Twitter. Nathan, thank you so much for joining us live from California.
Hey, I appreciate your time. Thank you so much.
Hellman on CliffCentral.com.